Welcome to Gnostic Chats, the podcast where we explore the depths of consciousness and the mysteries of the mind with your host, the Gnostic Chef. In this channel, we delve into the blending of ancient wisdom with modern insights to uncover the secrets of human consciousness and well-being. From understanding the power of the mind to exploring holistic approaches to health, join us on a journey of self-discovery and enlightenment. Get ready to expand your awareness and nourish your soul as we embark on an odyssey of Gnostic wisdom and transformative conversations.
Welcome in, seekers of truth, to another enlightened episode of the Gnostic Chats. I'm your guide through the labyrinth of knowledge, the Gnostic Chef. I'm here to serve you a feast of wisdom for the mind, body, and soul. Today, we embark on a journey beyond the ordinary, delving into the realms of healing frequencies and vibrations. Join us with this beacon of light to the whole world, this holistic wellness, this master, Chance. And he shares it all on his beautiful YouTube channel, The Innerverse. Chance is not just an individual, but a conduit of this healing energies, harnessing the power of frequencies to restore balance and vitality to those in need. Through his profound understanding of the interconnectedness of this universe, Chance has unlocked the secrets of healing through sound, guiding countless souls towards the profound transformation of renewal. So today, we would like to get into that. So Chance, can you briefly maybe run us through some of what you do, what your channel's bringing to the world?
Oh yeah, I love that question, because every time somebody finds out I'm a podcaster, they're like, well, what's your podcast about? And I'm like, oh boy, well, how am I going to answer that today? But I'm really here to bring forth anything that can crack open the third eye imagination portal just a little wider, or open that third ear in the heart a little more clearly to the inner voice, that still small voice within, right? I ultimately am about finding any information that I can talk about or learn about myself where somebody's worldview receives an upgrade. I think the only kind of healing that exists is worldview healing and self-view healing. They're the same thing. And the only kind of warfare that exists is worldview warfare. So I do my best to make sure that, you know, we're slaying the boogeymen. We are taking the limiters off of the potential for how good life can be in our experience of it, the perceptual filters, right? So in that, we talk about mythology, mysticism, symbolism, language, holistic healing modalities. Those are probably the most common topic. I mean, turns out that there's a zillion different languages for getting that mind, body, spirit connection better attuned to the infinite potential that each of us holds. And so I also work with clients. I do biofield tuning. You alluded to that. It's quite an amazing modality. It's a fun ride every time I get to work with the client one-on-one. And I just appreciate you having me on to talk about the stuff that I love. And I think we're going to have a good time.
Yeah. And as far as for the skeptics, like, I always like to bring the idea of this idea of sound and healing just straight forward with cymatics and the idea of watching that. And I'm sure you're well-versed in cymatics. Is this something you're familiar with?
I know about it. You know, yeah. I haven't done my own personal research or experience with it, I should say. But I do think that the premise of cymatics is that vibration can bring patterns to material, right?
Right.
And you can do that by running a vibration through a plate that has sand on it and watching how the sand forms into a pattern, the way the water crystals freeze. There's lots of different ways that it can be done. When we talk about cymatics, people tend to think about sound as the active ingredient in that equation. But in a broader sense, all forms of energy are the same as what we call sound. And they're just upon different parts of the perceptual spectrum. So that includes light, that includes, sound, that includes physical vibration, even things like scent. And so in a world where there's so much dissonant frequency across all parts of the spectrum, it's easy to get convinced that science, materialism, you know, very poisoned worldview that everything is expanding infinitely and eventually dying a slow and pitiful heat death where there's no longer enough energy in anything to hold its structure, and it all just dissipates into a big gray, cold nothingness. But they leave out, you know, in that description of entropy and that cosmological framework, they really leave out the concept of centropy, or the ordering principle of the cosmos. And that cymatics stuff that you can look up and see for yourself really demonstrates exactly the power of that force of centropy, that there's something that brings order, and that when something coherent or ordered is present, stuff that is disorderly or chaotic actually becomes more orderly. So I do my best to just be that coherent voice, that sunny side of the street instead of, you know, rain clouds over the head perspective, so that wherever I go, whatever I talk about, that it brings some of that harmonious, beautiful, delicious order.
That vibration, as you watch a tuning fork vibrate, and then the one next to it picks up that same vibration. It's the way of spreading, you know, a healing energy throughout your day even. So yeah, the cymatics is definitely one of the things that turned me on to it. And then listening and hearing about the ideas of like reaching resonance with tumors or things like that, and being able to blow these things up, reminds me of the opera singer and the wine glass. It's like once the opera singer reaches resonance with the wine glass, it destroys the glass. And so that to me is some damning evidence of maybe this being an actual probability of happening, something that can actually be a thing we could see in the future, as long as we were to put some energy and time into it. Do you share the sentiment on the wine glass explosion being evidence towards healing technology?
Yeah, it's funny. You know, we have the power to create or to destroy, and it's coming from the same source within us. My thing about the way a lot of people think of sound healing that I like to try to rectify their opinion about is I actually don't think that there's as much value as it might seem in that mystical, you know, in that like Rife machine technology type of get just the right frequency, just the right numbers, and point it at the part that's not doing well, and it'll just be fixed automatically.
Yeah.
Here's why. Because I'm not saying that there's no effect for stuff like that, but it's kind of in the same line of thinking as treating symptoms rather than root causes. So it might have I'm not saying that there's no value to stuff like Rife, or that we couldn't use targeted frequencies on certain, especially like malignant structures in the body, to do something to break them up and make them leave. But if we don't find the way to address the psyche level issues that brought about the distortion or dysfunction in the body, then that distortion and dysfunction will just return. Now, that being said, I'm not to be like hypocritical, but when I got into tuning myself, biofield tuning, it was because I was able to use a weighted tuning fork to heal an injury that I'd had for a long time. And I did start it, you know, I did start it from the body level first, without addressing the psyche level.
Okay.
But what I found was that when I addressed the body level problem, the psyche level problem that was related to it, that I was unaware was related to it because I was new to all this.
Right.
That basically found resolution. And I had to go through that. So it's not like, you know, I could have resisted that and stayed where I was at and probably got the injury back before too long. So my point being with saying that is it's most important to address these things on the psyche level, whether that's before we even consider healing the body and allow that mental shift to be what heals the body, or we, you know, have to follow up the bodily work with being real about what was going on in the framework of our thoughts.
It's funny too, because it works with your diet in the same sense, you know, like I can get you on a diet for a week or so, and as long as you stick to the ideas in the diet, then you'll be fine. But as soon as you start adding back in the toxic stuff, you're kind of just eliminating all of what you've done. So you might as well get the psychology or the psyche ready for the change, opposed to just changing something, you need to be, mentally ready to be changed as well. So yeah, I could see a mental state being a big focus on whether or not your body will heal throughout that. Just like the ideas of placebo coming to mind, where you kind of are, even if you're taking something or listening to something or doing anything, you could ultimately just be provoking powers within you that just would then go and heal yourself, right? It could have to do with the frequencies putting you into a state of consciousness that allows for these cells to start manipulating and can kind of going back to a conducive form, you know?
Isn't it funny how the science trademark will have zero understanding of a thing, but then they give it a name and then it's like, okay, we got that sorted out. Most of what passes for science is really just naming and categorization, mm-hmm. which is really funny, because if science is meant to be, you know, at square one, a system for helping us comprehend the natural phenomenon in our world, well, naming a thing has nothing to do with a natural phenomenon. Things are not their names.
Right.
The whole naming side of it is a fiction. So because most of the ologies in the world are just these big categorization logs, it's just funny how backwards that is and how little understanding there is, despite the bulk of these catalogs, if you will.
Right.
And, you know, I want to talk about, just to back up a little bit for anybody that's not as familiar with what I'm describing with biofield tuning, it's the process of, like I talked about before, centropy, allowing the body to recover lost energy potential by finding where that energy was held in separation, to put it simply. So you have an energy field, you have an electromagnetic field that your body's inside, and that field is your, is the flow of your mind. It's very kind of hard to pin down into the physical, but there is something physical about it, which is interesting. So you can use tuning forks to find where in the bubble 6 feet in all directions of your personal space there might be some kind of stuck emotion or limiting belief. How far away it is from your body determines how old you were when that experience got there. And proficient tuners have this ability of interpreting the energy that they find, that it becomes extremely profoundly weird how specific the information is that can be pulled out of someone's field. I call it the party trick. And like, not every session has as impressive of a party trick of like me telling somebody something about themselves that I had no way to know, but there's the potential for some really wild ones. Everyone gets what they need out of their session. You know, some people tell me a lot about themselves and their conditions up front before we start. Others, like the session I did yesterday, I got nothing up front. We had a conversation up front, but it wasn't really revolving around any specific issues, other than we wanted to help this client feel like they had like a higher energy threshold. They felt low energy. And as soon as I hit a fork, I immediately got a sense of, you know, there's something from the past that's limiting energy in the present. That seems kind of vague. And I also like to use divination tools in my process. This is something that makes me probably different than 99% of other biofield tuners, or maybe you're trained in the modality and certified. I'm actually self-taught, so I've kind of developed my own system. But in that system, I like to use tarot cards. And I have another deck that I like that's an oracle deck style, and it's just color-coded, one word, like emotion type concepts. So I knew there was something I needed to find out about right away. I drew a couple cards on it, and essentially the cards informed me, and I still have to interpret the cards, right? But they are what really help jog my intuition a lot of the time. So as soon as we're beginning this session, I immediately knew that this client had had an experience that was at the age of 22, that where their romantic partner had moved away, and that while they were long distance, there was a feeling of doubt about fidelity, something like that. Mm-hmm. Right. So I explained all of that. What was fascinating is the client actually was like, it wasn't 22, it was 24. And she explained a situation that was just like what I talked about. And as we progressed in the session, we found that the core issue of energy limitation for this individual had to do with reserving how invested they could be in relationship with their enthusiasm and with their care and all that, due to times in their life where the rug had been pulled out from under them, essentially through moving, you know, people moving away, or through just other kinds of abandonment as a youth.
It could be looked at as a death, you know, as a child.
So there's a big pattern with this. Like, it was a repeating cycle. And what's interesting about how we hide things in our psyche is that the next day I got a message from this client, and they told me, after, you know, after the session, my whole way of processing information has clearly shifted, and I'm noticing a bunch of differences already. But I wanted to tell you that I realized that what you were talking about of the, you know, significant other moving away when I was 22, that actually did happen. It happened exactly at that age, exactly as you say. And I got more of an explanation about how accurate that initial read was, but that they had, you know, they'd kind of stowed that away because that was how hard that was. And that's why it came up immediately at the beginning of the session, because that was sort of the crux of the whole negative feedback loop that was going on, was revolving around that moment, because it was probably the most intense example of the pattern that had been going on. So I just like how profound the specific information that can be pulled out of somebody's energy field is, due to the anatomy of your energy field having a consistency from person to person. And there's something to it, because I'm like, I'm in my living room and this person's in Canada, I'm in Missouri, you know, we're on a, we're on a Zoom call, and we can achieve all of that. It's one of the coolest modalities of all time. I enjoy it so much. It feels like I'm getting to employ pattern recognition, which is my favorite skill set as a podcast host.
And I was going to ask if that's probably part of how you're able to, you know, tell what this energy is telling you. It's not based on like actually physically seeing something. It's just based on recognizing a pattern that are associated with a certain, you know, behaviors that you can then deduce into one specific idea, right? Or along those lines.
So as I go through a session, I'm finding different key memory points in somebody's story of who they think they are, things that have happened. And the more of those I gather, the more I can cross-reference them to each other and say, what ties all these together? What's the theme emotionally or experientially that is repeating over and over in these different seemingly unrelated events from years apart from one another? And that's where there's a lot of power, is to if you can see those patterns so clearly, it makes it a lot of times just bringing the witness to the pattern breaks it for the person instantly, because they just didn't know. They've been living life with this expectation that that's how things are and that's how they'll always be. And that's why they keep creating the conditions for themselves where they repeat that exact pattern.
Right. Yeah. The power of witness is profound for sure. And it's illuminating and definitely a healing thing for sure, depending on how you're being seen, of course, or how your posture while you're being seen, you know.
And then there's also the beliefs that come along that have to be revised. So like, I'm using this person's example again, but there is a belief we were able to find in the solar plexus region that part of our energy center deals a lot with questions of power or powerlessness. And basically, we had to revise the previous belief that was existing there to, it had something to do with before about not being fully able to like invest or expect good things, or, you know, in relationship and et cetera. Essentially, it was the problem belief was that how other people show up in relationship for this person was causing the sense of their powerlessness. Like how good I feel about myself is affected by how other people are showing up in relationship with me. So we were able to just flip that and create a new belief that says, a chosen belief rather than adaptive conditioning that says how people show up in relationship has no effect over my power, my personal power or sense of will. And it seems like maybe little things, but you operate without knowing that there's these previously chosen beliefs or based on adaptations. They become invisible by the proximity. You think that's just who you are. That's your personality. And we can tweak those. And until you really experience how directly your physical energy and your health and well-being in your body is related to your belief structures, you just don't know. Unless you're like aware of this stuff and you believe it, but like you tell this to a doctor or something, they'll probably be like, what are you talking about?
Right.
You helped, you gave this person a different belief, and then all of a sudden they feel like they've got more vitality. Mm-hmm. That doesn't compute to materialism at all, but that's actually 100% how it works in truth.
Right. And it's funny because they could do the same thing with, I'm trying to think of like with a cane or something, you know, and then the idea they're helping them along. But what I was going to ask is, you were saying that it was getting blocked in the chest, and you're talking energy centers, and we're talking chakras, right? Is that similar to the same idea, correct?
Yeah, the biofield anatomy as a structure of what types of emotions and beliefs and experiences live at what levels of the body, vertically and horizontally, mm-hmm. that is completely related to the system of the chakras.
Right.
It's the same idea, but it's like it gets more specific with it. Like the chakras are kind of a nebulous idea, not totally nebulous, but there's a simplification of something that actually has a lot more information to it. So you almost look at it like the seven chakras are actually each four chakras, which is cool because it gives you that mystical 28.
Oh, right. Yes.
You know, because you have the front, the left, you have the front, the back, the left, and the right. So the front left, the back left, the front right, and the back right of each chakra has actually a different, has different information. So it's a expansion on that older system for sure. Where that system came from.
Right. It's the Ayurvedas.
Well, I assume it's just an Eastern mysticism idea.
Yeah.
I don't know exactly like who, and you know, it's so old. I don't know where,
right, true.
Who came up with the idea first, but I bet that the concept probably came from sensitive people who were able to tell that this energetic anatomy existed. And so they put it into words like the Ajna for the third eye and et cetera, because it is there. Like I said, I didn't get trained in this modality. I read a book about it by Eileen Day McCusick, Tuning the Human Biofield, which I highly recommend anybody read that is curious about this, or her other book, Electric Body, Electric Health. And I said to myself, well, I've experienced a huge helpful shift both in my health and in, you know, healing an injury, and in my personal life, much needed changes have occurred from very simple application of sound. And so I want to know more. I want to see if there's something to it, but I want to find out for myself. And granted that I was able to find out for myself that in the books, there's a generalization of the different things that are at different parts of the biofield. But as I progressed in experience, I found, okay, there's actually a wider range of potentials in each of these areas than can necessarily be easily covered off in a book that's an overview about it. So the fact that I found everything she was talking about and then some was really cool and told me, yep, there's something to this. And probably other people at different points in history have found something like this before too.
Yeah, it's awesome. Thank you for sharing the books. I'm always trying to get books out there as recommendations for people to go and entertain their minds with outside of the black box, you know? So I appreciate you sending that out for people to go and look for. And I've been considering recently the idea of how the chakra energy centers, quote unquote, are also like consciousnesses of their own. And that's why we have conflicting issues, that we have the gut telling us one thing while the heart's telling us another, while the mind is saying a third thing, you know, as if there's three different people speaking to you at one time and you're trying to have this other thing than try and, you know, convert the message into a actual action, you know? And what do you think of the idea of each of these centers having their own like consciousness?
I think that that's a really astute point, actually, that first of all, when we talk about this nebulous word energy, it's a synonym for consciousness, light, energy, consciousness. I think these are electricity. These are all similar ideas. And, you know, that brings up a whole side question of what is going on in our electronics. They're
right.
animated by True. Electricity. Is there some inner experience that the cosmic life force energy is having within these, you know, these artificially looped systems? That's
right.
another question. I can't answer that.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
It's definitely a maybe. So
yeah.
the energy that's in these different parts of your body in a healthy and unfragmented state, actually each pool flows into the next pool.
Mm.
You could look at it like little waterfalls where one chakra is a pool of water, and then it tips over the edge and into another pool, and that's the next chakra. And that tips over the edge into another pool, that's the next chakra, right? And it goes on. So they're not really, even though they each have sort of a different part of the frequency range of your ability to experience stuff, they're not actually in a healthy person separate. So they're not really different minds. But that being said, when we have the fragmentation going on, where there's a pocket of a frozen light, you could call it, somewhere in your field, because that light is the same as the life force that gives you your experience of consciousness. If it's split off and separated, it actually is akin to a separate entity inside of you. And you know, and how strong
right.
it is dependent on how much energy is held in reserve in that frozen fragment. And I think, I'm not saying that this is always the case, but I think that a lot of people's experience of like possession or attachment, and in my opinion, many cases is probably more accurately described as their own self fragmented and having and being in conflict with the rest of their self, which is
yes.
kind of profound. And then when it comes to how they get frozen like that, it tends to be built around limiting beliefs or emotional experiences that have been rejected and not allowed to flow. And I noticed that the best way to understand why somebody might have, like, everybody's got some amount of stuck energy that's not flowing as well, or is even kind of fully fragmented. I don't know that anybody ever fully combs it out. It's sort of a never ending potential for further improvement, especially when you think about how our life force is not separate from the life force of the entire cosmos, that it's the same exact pool or reservoir that animates all of us. It's beyond and before the concept of separation and division, that which is a philosophical, you know, argument that I personally hold to be the truth.
Yeah.
That your potential for further and further degrees of wholeness is an unlimited journey, which I think is cool. I don't look at that as discouraging.
Yeah.
That it's kind of like the way that the phi ratio always gets closer and closer to the golden mean ratio, but it never actually gets there. I look at that as a sort of a representation of our journey to wholeness, that it's like we can get exponentially closer and closer, but there's always further to go. And then it's an infinite journey. But I found, though, with injury and distortion in the body, like major dysfunction or actually like legit things being out of place,
right.
that always coincides with two beliefs that do not go together, like fully conflicting beliefs that are trying to coexist. That is where I see things go from being just like, your energy is limited and you're not fully getting the entire flavor of potential in that type of energy versus it hurts.
Right.
It's not
trauma.
Working. Something's wrong.
Right.
Yeah. Like an example I could give for that is a recent client. he came in with like lower back pain that he had said had been going on for 10 or 12 years. And he was a pretty young guy. So basically his whole life, it must have been, or, you know, most of his life. And he'd had a lot of recurring injuries in his right ankle as well. And what I found in the session was that this is just a funny, it's funny. I'm not laughing at him. I'm sure he gets it. It's like, it's funny the things that we take on when we're kids, but he was raised really, uber churchian, right?
Mm, yeah.
And that we found this point in his timeline where he internalized the story of Job. And basically like his belief structure, they got internalized around the biblical story of Job, which for anybody not familiar, that's when Job was totally crushing. He was God's best servant. He had a great family. He was wealthy. Everything was going great. And then the devil is like, well, I bet the only reason Job is such a good servant to you, God, is because he's happy and you give him nice things. And God's like, oh, no problem. I'll just utterly destroy everything about his life and bring him to complete ruin. And he'll still be my servant. So, gotcha. You know, that story hits different when you're a little kid, I think. And for this individual, yeah. It was like living, that story was like living in the back right of his sacral chakra. In that quadrant, it has to do with our capacity to feel pleasure, basically like feeling good, feeling good overall, but especially in our body, like physically feeling good in the body. And when that's out of whack, it coincides with numbness or physical pain in the body a lot of the time. Mm-hmm. And so there's that. The belief that he had internalized was like, I better not feel too good or I'm going to get the Job, you know, smiting.
Right.
You know, I can't ever be like as perfect as Job or
yeah,
I'm in trouble. Mm. And then found in his right ankle, I'll shorten the story a little bit, but we found in the right ankle, which has to do with perfectionism a lot of the time is one of the things that hangs out in the right ankle. We found a serious perfectionism drive. It was like, I gotta be perfect. So there was two things happening at once. I gotta be perfect and I can't be too good. And that does not, those things are directly at odds, right? Mm-hmm. And so in the areas where we're related to where these beliefs were at, he had lower back pain chronically, and he had many recurrences of ankle injury in his life. And after just one tuning where we found those conflicting beliefs and removed those, he texted me like a week or two later, and he's like, I was waiting to make sure that it wasn't a fluke, but I haven't had any lower back pain the entire time since the session. Yeah.
That's amazing.
So that's another fun example. I really like people to start trying to be mindful of where they might have cognitive dissonance in beliefs that directly conflict, because you leave those too long or they're too strong, that's where you start to really feel the hurt. Mm-hmm. But the thing about all this is, and I'm sure I'm no different, it's really hard to see this stuff in yourself objectively. It just is, because it's like, that's just how it is. That's just how I am. That's just what life is like. You know, these are all running kind of unconsciously. That's the nature of it. I always use the metaphor, it's akin to wearing a kick me sign that you can't see. Like it's just out of your peripheral vision, or it's on your back. Mm-hmm. And so getting a technician in there to work on your aura, they can see this stuff way more objectively. They can look at the patterns of your life. You know, and a lot of times in a session, people can tell me parts of their life story that they've never said out loud all in the same conversation before. Mm-hmm. You know, that's another thing. Like they've never really put all the pieces on the table at the same time. And it's a collaborative process. The best sessions are where the client is helping me put the puzzle pieces together as much as I'm helping them.
Right.
It's just my job to figure out what are the important puzzle pieces. And we bring those to to our view, and we go from there. And it's crazy what can happen in an hour. We can make a lot of progress on that puzzle in 1 hour.
That energy center where it was controlled of like the happy feel good, is that located in the gut by chance?
The sacral is definitely governing areas of the gut.
Yeah.
Like the stomach and
it's just funny because
also the generative organs.
Yeah. The gut is in charge of the serotonin, right? So,
oh yeah.
So it's interesting that
it's all got a biological physical correlate to it.
Right.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It's definitely, awesome. And so the idea of the centers getting, clogged, the charge, moving things around, the analogy where you were saying the water falling and filling in a cup. I was still picturing how like even this lower level that's waiting on the water from up top can get like resentful that this cup is full. And so he's like now cursing this cup above him. And now you've got like this. So I was like, cause I compassionate this idea of like the schizophrenic is literally the most in tuned with his inner verse that anybody else can be. And being that our cells are constantly in this like fight to battle death and, you know, all of these craziness is happening through meiosis and your white blood cells being warriors and going and seeking out battle. You've got the consciousness of the energies, all these things just communicating that we never get to hear. But what if this schizophrenic is now tuned in to a level to hear his inner verse and all of the battles within? And you've got like his gut telling him that he's an idiot for bringing or like, but he's not realizing it's his gut. He's calling this thing an entity outside of him because that's all he can compassionate and render into his reality is that it's something outside. But in reality, in my proposal here is that it's internal things that are he's hearing, you know?
I think that's probably true with the schizophrenic. But the reason why it's such a bad time for them is mm-hmm. because they've divided themselves into such a vast cast of characters and all of the self parts that they've cast away and made separate external entities.
Like they disassociated also, with everything.
The disassociation comes from that part of myself is bad.
Mm.
And so that's why when they hear it, you know, trying to call out to them, they're like, away, demon. You know,
right.
They think it's something evil.
You put it in a closet and then the darkness only breeds more darkness, you know? So yeah, I could see that being a thing for sure.
Yeah, sometimes there's strong enough separated psychic energy that it really is like of an entire identity in and of itself.
Right.
It's not as common, but I have found that before in certain clients where it's a full on other
conscious
personality.
Yeah.
And it's not that, so much another, it's like
not out of consciousness, but
you know, one that comes to mind is somebody who we like, they had such a fragmentation in their early childhood that it manifested as an imaginary friend actually. And that imaginary friend, when we were doing the tuning, we found, okay, this is actually, I don't know the age, but let's say like a 2-year-old version of yourself that got totally separated out and is living, coexisting in your inner world as an alternate entity. And interestingly, once those ego states are formed distinctly like that, they can't really ever be disintegrated. You know, we've all got some of them in us, I think. Mm-hmm. And that's not itself a problem. It's about right. getting them to work together harmoniously.
Yeah.
There's some cool modalities like internal family systems that is a therapy for letting the self parts talk to other self parts and understand each other and work together better. And that sounds kind of schizo, but even you might think that you have no psychic fragmentation, but if you get a good IFS practitioner and you work with them, they'll have you talking to different self parts before you know it. And you'll be like, wow, there's something really talking back to me. It's kind of like a light hypnosis, but it's not really hypnosis. It's more like closer to a guided meditation or a shamanic journey or a seance, but it's your inner selves that you're seancing. Mm-hmm. And that's a cool, really cool modality. I'm looking forward to talking more about that in future episodes of Innerverse with, people adapt at it because I've only really got into it once, but it has a lot of overlap with biofield tuning.
Right. And it is fun listening to your experiences of like some of the people you've helped. as far as that, do you have like a number of people that you've been helping, or do you take on clients all the time? How's that work?
I have to go at a pace where I can feel 100% enthusiasm for every case. Otherwise, I don't think I could be as effective. And it's going to sound kind of like, I don't know, braggy, but I've really crossed over from doubt and worry in terms of my effectiveness to a place where like I'm kind of a tuning savant. And I don't think that I'm the only one out there. I think anyone could actually learn how to do this, but I have such a high degree of care for the modality and in how I love it so much that my aptitude, I think your aptitude or your talent is a reflection of your care. They're the same metric. So I have a ton of care about this, and so I have a really great aptitude for it. And but part of that is keeping the care level high. Like I manage that. I manage that really, really specifically. So in terms of the volume of clients, I tend to do three or four a week. And that is important to me to never be like a assembly line, like just cranking people through. Every once in a while, I might have more than one in the same day, but typically the day that, you get a tuning with me on my end, that day is about you. And I prepare for a solid hour before a session just to get myself in the zone. And, of course, I got to live my life in accordance to the principles that keep me in the zone, the perpetual flow state and synchronicity and all that. So that's generally, that's why you might have to wait 4 or 5 weeks to get a session with me if you sign up, because I don't just crank them out. I don't treat it like an assembly line.
Which
I
is
keep it
good,
at
yeah.
the level and rate that allows it to be 100% enthusiasm. And I've been doing that for, I don't know, since 2020. Probably the amount of sessions ramped up by 2021. But I've been doing it a while, and I'm at the point too where almost half of the sessions I do are people coming back for another session that I've
Repeat.
already worked with before, which
That's
is
awesome.
cool because we can go even deeper.
Yeah,
One session
round
can be
twos are
amazing,
always
but
deeper.
yeah, it often is. Exactly. So I hope that answers the question.
Oh yeah, 100%, and I appreciate that. Yeah, you said something earlier that I'm trying to remember because it struck a chord based on oh yeah, materialists wanting to label everything or like name everything. Do you feel that this is necessary though? Like a necessary thing, like man needs a second world to base himself or like a second world of meaning, like outside of this natural realm, like to
Yeah,
label.
that's I get it. That's why the universal singular source and life force energy is experiencing itself subjectively through infinite peepholes. Like just the way that we language things and categorize things and all that as a system of artificiality is pretty much the exact same, and it's a way that we can understand the different parts of the all, the total reality experience. We chop it up into these different categories and we put the labels on them and we know what's what and how it all fits together. Well, that's the exact same thing that the source consciousness that we all emanate out of is doing with James and Chance and you listening.
Yeah,
So
right.
it's just a natural function of reality.
Yeah.
It's what we do.
I just see we in the communities like to I think vilify some of it, And I get the idea there is a lot of out there to look at and be a little bit more skeptical and things like that. But isn't that kind of what we're supposed to be, skeptics on everything anyways?
Yeah, it's just not getting lost in the fiction part. Like,
True.
it's not disregarding it. I find communication to be really important, and systems of language and classification are also important, just in the same way that you can take somebody's words or your own words and bring the green language to bear on it, that left and right brain balanced thinking, and transcend the intended definition of the words to look and break apart what it sounds like, alternate meanings for those words, what those words mean in other languages. Mm. And you can have the original basic interpretation of what was said to you. And then right. you can have this mystical interpretation that's giving you layers of meaning that reflect your inner experience deeply, deeply. And that's mysticism, right?
Right.
And the same thing goes for, what appears to be, you know, a different and separate person than you that you're talking to. Whenever you apply that balanced yin and yang energy or left and right brain interpretation of how they're showing up in your life in that moment, then you can eventually dig your way to see that it's a perfect reflection of your inner world at the same moment of the encounter. And that's why symbolic literacy is so freaking important. If you want to have that more holistic experience of life on the, like, and feel connected to God or source, because if you don't have that catalog of symbols and meaning in the range and variety that they could potentiate, then, you know, it all just seems like random things happening around you that have no meaning. But, you know, like the Jungian synchronicity idea that is treated by most psychologists as the exception, the bizarre exception to an otherwise predictably meaningless life of randomness. But you got the symbolic literacy powerfully integrated well enough, then synchronicity is apparent in everything at all times, endlessly. And that's a way more fun place to be. That's where you're going to find the enthusiasm in Theos, you know, like that's,
yeah.
I think that the Holy Spirit rushes towards the peepholes that are most open. And, you know, think like a window is open in your house, air rushes out it or through it, right?
Right.
And in the same way, if you've cleared the doors of your perception, your windows are clear or open, then that Holy Spirit breath, pneuma, divine wind is going to go rushing towards that peephole that is you, and it's going to power you up. So,
yeah,
you know, whatever you're doing in life, I think the most important threshold to monitor, even though you're told that that's like frivolous, is how much fun you're having.
Right.
I'm serious about that. Like, that's the best metric for your well-being that you've got, is how stoked are you about it, and to structure your life around what is giving you the authentic feeling of excitement is the healthiest way you can structure your life. I don't mean like, you know, a lot of people have mixed up fun with numb, with, you know, mindless entertainment, vegging out, stuff like that. And I'm not even saying you can't have, you know, your own
time,
time to do things that might fit in that category of like a more passive and entertained place. But overall, to keep the enthusiasm threshold high, to treat all of the potential experiences that are in front of you through the lens of, if it isn't a full body 100% hell yes, I'm allowed to say no to it.
Right.
And try to keep yourself in the full body hell yes as much as you can. There's a lot of power. There's a lot of divine aid that actually swoops in to help you achieve that choice of staying in the hell yes. Whereas, again, I don't think that much of that divine wind comes in through a closed window. If you're not, you know, you don't get the same level of feeling of being lifted up and aided by God or the divine when it's not fun for you.
Yeah.
And I think that the creator energy really wants mostly to create things that are memorable, enjoyable, and expansive, you know, and things that make us learn more about ourselves and about nature. And that learning is a big part of the fun too.
Yeah.
Because that's what keeps it fresh and not boring, which is part of the enthusiasm metric.
Yeah. Well, we are coming up on the hour, but before we get going, I also wanted to ask if you thought that the mystery is part of the medicine. Like, once you start quantifying things on a piece of paper, do you think it starts losing some of its value?
Well, I think models have their value in as conceptual frameworks that allow us to communicate ideas and relationships, but a model is not reality. The map is not the terrain, right?
Right.
Like, so people getting lost in their models that makes them lose touch with the mystery.
Right.
And back to, like, in terms of how that relates to healing, first of all, a lot of the ruin that people experience comes through their certainty, that they're certain that this is just how life is, or they're certain that this is my unchangeable personality. But, well, I think if we can open up to the maybe and the I don't know, that's where new possibilities enter from. The unknown is scary, which is why fear is the restrictive side of the polarity of existence. That when we're in fear, the range of things that we would consider to be allowable, permissible, or okay narrows down and narrows down until eventually you're in the neurotic stage of, it has to be like this. This is the only way it can be. Otherwise, I'm screwed, or I'm going to die, or it's not okay. And the love is the looking at the object of what you love and saying, I love you so much, I don't care what you do. I just want you to do whatever makes you happy and whatever is best for you. And it could be anything.
Right.
I just want to see you express your potential. So when you look at those two forces, love and fear, through the lens of potential and restriction, and we consider that like in the lens of our biofield and the idea of the mystery, well, is your story the mystery?
Mm-hmm.
For a lot of people, their story is a mystery in the sense that they have no idea. They may know what things were traumatizing to them, but they have no idea how it affected their behavior or their free will choice about their personality.
Right.
I think their personality doesn't have free will to it. They think it's something set, but that's not true at all.
Yeah,
you may have
all the time.
Like, tendencies and aptitudes and all that. I believe that's true. And that's relating to where you feel the spark and the care. And those are all great, but they're not limiters. They're expanders. So, you know, the healing comes through really integrating my story, your story, the mystery.
Yes.
And taking back your ability to decide what it means among a variety, an infinite multiplicity of semiotic possibilities. And that happens all the time with clients where they had an experience and in their mind, it means this. And this sucks. I like to come in and say, what if that experience, instead of meaning that you're less or weakened by it, it happened because you're so strong. Like, to put it simply, in the specifics, it would be more, you know, fine tuned to the individual and what their thing was. But
yeah,
that's the ultimate, is to realize you are the source of the meaning. Mm-hmm. You get to make the meaning. You get to decide the meaning.
Yeah.
Just like you say a word and you meant this definition, not that definition. You get to do that, apply that to all the interpretations you have about who you think you are and what you think life is. So why not choose the one that feels good, feels fun, feels like more possibilities, more potential.
Yes, we are all the artists and authors, right? So
yeah,
it makes sense as to why we, some people forget that, or maybe it's not that they forget that, it's that they don't want that power. Like they know they can have it, but they just can't hold it. And, maybe through some of this tuning.
That would mean they're responsible for everything that ever happened to them that they've been blaming something else for.
Yeah. Right. So that might be a too large for some people to hold. I'm not sure. I don't want to feel that that's the way it is, but it does seem that way sometimes.
It can be the trickiest part of facilitating someone's healing, is to navigate them through where they're blaming and help them choose to take responsibility for it.
Yeah. Ownership, right?
Because none of this works if you can't let go of the blaming. Like, ultimately what we do is we're rooting out vestiges of sneaky victimhood.
Right.
Ways that we were maintaining the victim persona without realizing it. Mm. And there's always deeper levels of it.
Right. You know,
the victimhood is the sneakiest hood.
Yeah, yeah.
But if it's always better to let go, release that particular false persona.
Yeah, accountability. People, the world would change in a day if everyone became accountable for, you know, their thoughts and actions. But we're probably going to take some time to figure that one out, because we got to at least let it keep going around in this cycle or something, right?
Well, I think we're here to grow souls, and
yeah,
souls start out, you know, in the mud, and they need that mud to blossom into the mm-hmm. lotus. And I don't see any reason why the world should ever become perfect and yeah. balanced, because the disequilibrium in things is what allows for motion and for change and for experience. So I invite it all. I'm yeah. cool with it. I'm cool with it. I think it's perfect how it is.
I agree 100% with that sentiment. I think that it brings so much value. And as long as you have the posture to stand up tall and look at the world with the eyes and contrast to see, you'd see it in a different way. But like you said, sometimes that takes some time or some tuning. But yeah, I appreciate you being here, Chance. I'm going to let you get out of here and on your way. I know you're a busy man. You probably have some 800 podcasts to get ready for. This
I got a super cool one tomorrow.
Do so, you? Which one is that again? Remind us.
So, and it may be out by the time your show here releases, James, but I've got, I'm going to be putting together the finishing touches on an interview I did with the author, Mark Gober, who was a Princeton graduate, high performing Wall Street financial advisor type, who started asking the big questions of like, why can't science answer for consciousness? And began a journey of, you know, writing many books about various paradigms of thought that are completely upside down in the mainstream. And this dude's on a journey. Really great author.
What kind of books does he have out there?
So they're all part of the same series, but the two that we're going to talk about in this interview are The End of Upside Down Thinking, which is about the hard problem of consciousness and what research has been done to prove the validity of psi phenomenon and extended consciousness powers and experiences. And that book is great. I mean, it's kind of a old hat for me, because it's the type of information that got me interested in all of these realms that I'm mm-hmm. currently swimming in.
Yeah.
But he brings the information together really beautifully, really journalistically, and neutrally. And then we also are talking about his newest book, The End of Upside Down Medicine, which takes a big swing at
big things pharma. Like
cooties is real and mm-hmm. gonna get you.
Yeah, yeah, you. I like it. Yeah, I like it. I wrote it down. I'm definitely gonna go look it up now and give it a read. That's one of my things nowadays, is just diving into a book until it's over. But
well, he's got audiobooks and he narrated them himself.
Oh, yeah?
And that's actually how I was able to be prepared with two of his books consumed nice. Before I interviewed him, was the audiobooks. So check yeah. out The End of Upside Down Thinking, The End of Upside Down Medicine by Mark Gober. Everybody out there, worth an Audible credit for sure.
Well, thank you again for being here. And hopefully we'll maybe get together again to share some more of your beautiful awareness and knowledge that you're willing to share with everybody for completely free on your Interverse podcast. So if anybody is out there that's listening that really wants to get involved in some of this mental and mind states and healing abilities, you're going to need to go and check out his channel. And I appreciate everyone for being here. But till the next time, we'll see you. And blessings, Chance.